Chapter 5. All these years later, to see what this place had become, I parked as close as I could, got out, and started walking down the sidewalk. Roosevelt Park was devoid of any life, save for a flock of birds roosting in one of the trees. The birds shuffled and murmured, but did not fly away as I walked past. Michigan Central Station loomed in the sky ahead of me. MCS. The MC Depot. Whatever you wanted to call it. It was half empty back in the day, back when it was part of my beat. Now, it was gutted. It was violated. It was torn apart from the inside out. Every window was broken. I mean, 18 stories high, hundreds of windows. Every single one broken. There was a high cyclone fence around the building. Through it, I could see the graffiti and the litter. And in some places, I could even see the sunlight from the other side of the building. It was the first time I had stood this close to the building since that other summer, all those years ago. "What the hell?" I said out loud. I was looking at the shell of what was once a monument, a palace, and I was thinking of everything else I had seen that day. How can a whole city come to this? There was something more, too, besides what had happened to this place, this city. Something about the day itself. It was a low-level hum just starting in my head. I walked down past the station, toward the river. The track still looked usable. I was sure the train still came this way, emerging from under the river and roaring right past the old station. There would be no reason to stop here now, or even to slow down. I kept going on the other side of the razor wire fence, past the big post office building with all the trucks lined up in the parking lot. A sign of life, at least. Some real business still being conducted. I ended up on Rosa Parks Boulevard, looking at yet one more long wreck of a building, a full block of shuttered windows, and an old loading dock that hadn't seen a truck in months, or maybe years. The street side of the building was tagged with more graffiti. Already today, I had seen so many combinations of spray-painted letters. There was a bridge with a battered, rusty wreck of a fence on either side, and then the road curved east as it came up against the Detroit River. I kept walking. I saw the five great towers of the Renaissance Center up ahead as I walked along the river. I could remember back when they built those towers, and of course, I knew what the word Renaissance meant to this city. If we could have looked forward to right now, would the whole idea have felt like a lie? Or was there still hope? I looked at my watch. The sun was high, but it was pushing 5 o'clock. Time to get back to my truck. Maybe I'd have the chance to think about the big questions later, but right now, it was time to have dinner with Agent Janet Long. I met her at the FBI offices on Michigan Avenue. They owned one floor in the McNamara Federal Building, along with the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Secret Service. The DEA was right across the street. I waited in the lobby for her. The elevator doors opened, and she came out chatting with another agent. It was her partner, Agent Flurry. I'd met them both at the same time, when they'd come up to my part of the state. Agent Flurry and I had gotten off to a rough start with each other, although I supposed we'd made our peace in the end. Still, there was probably little chance of me inviting him to join Janet and me for dinner. She saw me and waved to me. She was wearing a dark blue skirt and jacket with a white blouse, the standard uniform of a female FBI agent. As she came over to me, we both had this moment of sudden bewilderment, like, why are we both standing here, as if we're supposed to have anything to do with each other? She broke the spell by giving me a quick hug.
"You remember my partner," she said, "Agent Flurry."
"Nice to see you again," he said, shaking my hand.
He was younger than us. His suit was tailored. His hair was perfect. He reminded me a little of Detective Bateman, back in his prime. He didn't stick around for small talk. He wished us both a good evening, and then he left.
"You look good," she said as soon as he was gone. "But you must be tired. It's a long way from Paradise to Detroit."
"In more ways than one."
"I remember how you drive," she said. "Still using that ex-cop with a bullet angle, huh?"
"Well, it would be a shame not to."
"So I thought we'd have dinner in Greektown. Does that sound all right?"
"That sounds perfect. You want me to drive?"
"This is downtown," she said. "We'll take the people mover."
We walked a block to the station on Cass Avenue.
For 50 cents, you can get on this raised monorail that makes a 3-mile loop around downtown, stopping at Joe Louis Arena, the Renaissance Center, Greektown, a few other destinations. It's slow as hell, but it gets the job done, and you don't have to drive your car. Maybe even more importantly, you don't have to park somewhere you might not feel that good about. We hopped on the tram and stood there looking down as the streets passed below us. Everybody was getting off work in the financial district and in the GM headquarters. Men with suits and briefcases were walking down the street, many of them joining us in the people mover. "It's good to see all these people downtown," I said. "You'd almost think the old city was doing okay."
"It can feel that way some days," she said, "especially in the summer, especially down here by the river."
When we finally made it to the eastern side of the loop, we got out at Greektown and walked to the restaurant. We passed right by the Greektown Casino, one of the 3 casinos in the city now. Hard to even imagine back when I was on the police force, going the Atlantic City route and inviting everything else that comes with the gambling money. Yet, here they were. I'm sure they were all doing decent business, but I couldn't help thinking they were really just huge monuments to the city's desperation. Once the greatest manufacturing center in the world, now just a place where you can go to play the slot machines.
"This one was owned by your neighbors," Janet said as she looked up at the bright lights on the Greektown Casino.
"It was," I said, shaking my head. After the Bay Mills tribe started the ball rolling with the first Indian-run blackjack casino in the country, the Sioux tribe over in Sault Ste. Marie jumped in with both feet, building the huge Kuwaitan Casino, and then eventually expanding their operations down here when Detroit passed the new gaming law. Not a year later, the gaming board took the casino away from them and gave it to a new group of investors. You can still guarantee yourself an interesting conversation by walking into any bar or restaurant in Sault Ste. Marie, finding a Sioux member, and asking him what he thinks of the tribal leaders who let that happen. The restaurant was just down the street from the casino, a Greek place, believe it or not. We got a table upstairs, and Janet ordered us some wine. "This is on me," I said.
"Think again, mister. You're the one who drove all the way down here."
We put that fight off for later. I sat there and drank my wine and looked at her. There was a calmness to her face that I had found appealing from the first moment I had seen her. She was up in the UP trying to solve what would turn out to be multiple murders, going back years. Yet there was always this air of self-assurance about her. I liked her hair, too, the way it framed her face. "Remind me again," I said. "How old are you?" She laughed at that one.
"Is that your opening line on all your dates?"
"So this is a date, you're saying?" She shook her head, but she was smiling.
"God, we really don't know each other very well, do we?"
"Well, we never got the chance. We were both so preoccupied when you were up there. Then you had to go."
"Yeah, I made you promise to come down and take me to dinner," she said. "I have to admit, I was starting to think you never would."
"I'm sorry. I should have come down sooner."
"So, why now?"
"One of the last collars I made when I was down here," I said. Right before I left the force. It was a homicide over in the old train station."
"You're the one who caught him?"
"Eventually. I ID'd him anyway. Was there when he was finally arrested. He's getting out this week, so I got the courtesy call. Not that I think in a million years that he'll be coming for me."
"Then why did you need to come down here?"
"I got talking to the old sergeant," I said. "He said I should come down and see the place, so I figured what the hell."
"Ah, so it wasn't just to see me."
She had a little smile on her face as she said it. "A few reasons put together," I said. "Just call it that. Keeping my promise was the best reason of all." She looked over her wine glass at me, like she wasn't quite buying it. "I spent a few hours driving around today," I said. "I couldn't believe it."
"I know. It's not like I spend a lot of time in the neighborhoods, but..."
"Why are they all leaving, Janet? It's turning into a ghost town."
"Well, I've worked on more than a few corruption cases," she said. "Not that Detroit is the only city where it happens, but, you'd be amazed. We seem to have elevated it to an art form."
"But that can't be the only reason."
"The city is broke, Alex. I mean, absolutely flat-out busted. They can't even keep all the streetlights on anymore. They can't run the buses. They want everybody to pick up and move closer together, basically cut the size of the city in half.
And do what with the rest?
Hell if I know. Urban farming? Just let it go wild? Some of the city's half wild already.
Yeah, I heard about the bears living in the abandoned buildings.
I think that's just an urban legend.
Oh, really? It seems like such a good deal for the bears.
Just the fact that it sounds almost believable, she said. That we'd really have that many empty buildings and so much open space.
I can't believe how many burnt-out houses I saw today. That's one thing we always had to deal with. But then they'd come through the next week and knock them all down, sometimes even rebuild.
They don't need people to set fires anymore,
she said, looking out the window, like she could take it all in from where we were sitting.
The city is burning itself down.
How do you mean?
In the summertime, when it's dry, sometimes the power lines will come down and start fires. There was one day a couple of years ago, you couldn't even walk down the street without choking on it. There were hundreds of houses burning down all at once.
All right, we have to stop talking like this, I said. There must be something good going on around here.
The Tigers have a nice new stadium.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I don't care how beautiful Comerica Park is.
It's not Tiger Stadium, I know. I grew up here too, remember?
We drank a toast to Tiger Stadium, then to the old Olympia Stadium, the old red brick building where Gordie Howe and the Red Wings once played. We toasted the Bob Lowe boat that took kids down the Detroit River. We toasted Verner's Ginger Ale, back when it was strong as rocket fuel. We toasted Greenfield Village and the automobile shows that would bring classic cars and hot rods from all over the world coming back home to the Motor City. The cruise up and down the streets all day long and into the night, while thousands of people gathered along the sidewalks and parking lots to barbecue and drink beer and argue about which cars were the best. We had our dinner. We eventually got around to talking about our past relationships. It turned out we were both married once, something else I didn't know about her. We started getting closer to the present and to the unspoken question about what might still happen between the two of us, even that very night.
You live really far away,
she said as we had our dessert.
You're aware of that, right?
Yes, I am.
It would be next to impossible to do much else besides what we're doing right now.
If we both stay where we are, yes.
This is nice, though. I'm glad you came down.
I'm glad, too.
But tell me the truth,
she said, looking me in the eye.
Why are you really here?
I had the same two or three answers I'd already given her. I didn't have the one single answer that would really satisfy both of us. In the end, after we battled over the bill and finally ended up splitting it, we got up and walked outside and into the night. We didn't go into the casino. We just walked down the sidewalk, back to the people mover, back to her car and to my truck. She hugged me and gave me a quick kiss. Nobody said a word about us spending the night together, and I have to believe that maybe we were both a little relieved that it never came up. I promised her that I'd see her again soon. She hesitated as she opened her car door.
Are you sure you're not thinking about moving back down here? Somewhere we could see each other more than once or twice a year?
Well, I said, let's just say I now have one more good reason to do that. She came back to me and gave me another kiss.
You're damned right you do.
Then she got in her car and she drove home. I stood there under the streetlight for a while. Then I got in my truck and drove down Michigan Avenue. A police car cut in front of me, lights and siren going, and for one second, my old instincts told me to follow the car so I could help out. It was these same streets, after all. For 8 years I had done this. I turned off into a parking lot next to the first bar I saw. It was just a concrete box, as far away from the Glasgow Inn as you could imagine, but it was all I needed that night. I sat at the bar with a double scotch and looked at my own face in the mirror. You will always be alone, I told myself. That's just the way it is. When I finally left that place, I knew it had been too long a day, with a little bit too much to drink, for a 5-hour drive back home. I'd thrown a toothbrush and a few things into a bag, not making any kind of plan, just being ready for whatever happened.
I drove a few blocks down to the little motel on Michigan Avenue, where once upon a time you could open the drapes and look down the street at the gray walls of the stadium. The stadium was gone now, as I kept proving to myself every time I drove by it that day, still surprising myself every time. But the little motel was still there, and now I suppose it was officially the most forlorn place in the world, with no special view from your window to set it apart. I checked in for one night. I lay on the bed for exactly 2 minutes, listening to another police car's siren in the distance. Then I got back up and went out to the truck. There was no way I'd be able to sleep. I got in the truck and drove around the city, one more time, just to see it again. What had it become? I went to the train station. Of course I did. I parked in the same place, got out, and walked down the same sidewalk, stood on the same piece of cracked pavement, and looked up at all of the broken windows. How unnatural for there to be no lights on inside at all, not one single light in an 18-floor building. Something horrible happened here, I thought, and I never really got the time to process it. I never understood it or made my peace with it, because just a month later, in that very same summer, something else happened that obliterated my entire life. So now that I was here again, standing in this very spot where that first thing happened, it was like I finally had the chance to make some sense of it, all these years later. I was feeling that hum again, louder this time. Something is not right. That's the thing that came to me. Something is not adding up for me. Not then. Not now. Not ever. This is why you came all the way down here, Alex. This thing that you knew deep down, but could only start to put words to when you got the chance to stand here in the dark, in this exact moment. This is why you're here.